case is number 065012, Colvin Cattle Company against the United States. Mr. Van Zandt.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you. May it please the court. The plaintiff is sued in this case for taking of its water rights and ranching operation near Goldfield, Nevada.
The water rights aren't taken, are they?
Yes, the water rights have been taken.
How?
Been taken by barring the Colvin Cattle Company from accessing them.
Well, but the rights themselves remain yours and are undisturbed by the fact that the grazing lease has gone to someone else, right?
No, a water right is only as good as the ability to use it.
Okay, but in theory you might be able to apply for some right-of-way to gain access to your water and, I don't know, truck your cattle in to get their water and truck them out so that they don't impinge on the grazing rights of someone else, but at least on the record that I've read, there's no withdrawal or taking of your water rights.
Well, I think you have to look at the practical situation that we have here, which is an issue of fact, and this case was decided on a motion to dismiss, and there is a factual dispute about the practicality of being able to go and utilize those water rights.
But they didn't expressly take those rights. You could get an easement, some kind of right-of-way to get access to your water. It's just, well, still your water.
Theoretically possible that could happen.
Okay.
But evaluate a motion to dismiss in this context is the court, of course, is under a limited standard of review. And the court should be looking at, of course, the facts pleaded in the complaint. And take those as true and draw all reasonable inferences from those. Now, the facts leading up to the termination of Colvin's lease are in dispute, cannot be resolved in a motion to dismiss or by summary judgment. Moreover, the important question of what local law and custom was in Nevada that applied to these rights, that would define the rights confirmed to Colvin and its predecessors in interest, is a mixed question of law and fact. In fact, in a similar case that's now before the Court of Federal Claims, Walker versus the United States, cited in our brief, Judge Braden has certified that very question to the New Mexico Supreme Court. It's pending now. It's been fully briefed. It's not been fully briefed, but almost fully briefed, and that question is going to be answered shortly. The United States and the trial court want to limit this case to an inquiry about grazing permits, but this case really is not about grazing permits. It doesn't have anything to do with grazing permits. The real focus of the case is on stock watering rights. Water rights and
but the question is the grazing permit, isn't it? I don't recall the bar to access to the water. Isn't the issue the grazing permit?
There is no grazing permit here, Your Honor. It's the grazing lease, the Section 15 lease.
But the fact that grazing is no longer available.
That the United States has terminated the lease. That
yes.
That is correct, and barred Colvin Cattle Company from accessing its water rights.
Because you didn't pay the fees.
And we tendered the fees. Now there was a factual dispute about how that all came about. That the trial court.
Well, the basis, if I understand from your briefs, is you say Nevada law gives you the water rights, and therefore you should get the grazing rights, which are attendant to the water rights. But how can Nevada law preempt a federal program, a federal land grant?
There's not a preemption, of course. Before the passage of the Taylor Grazing Act,
this is federal land, right?
Stand around it, recognized that the states could regulate the grazing within those lands prior to the passage of the Taylor Grazing Act. Of course, we have in the Mining Act of 1866 that these rights are to be administered according to local law and custom.
This gets back to the whole Hage theory that the states are still in charge of the land, right?
Well, the states are in charge of the water rights, and
all the and land the uses, is attendant
no,
to it.
Not the land, but the uses. It's the uses that we're talking about here. These uses are they're inheritable uses. They're mortgageable, and you know they are real there's real value to these rights that the ranchers rely upon. So I think what you have to look at is that in the Mining Act of 1866, with local law and custom, as defined essentially by the 1925 Stockwater Act in Nevada, that defined what the local law and custom was. That was preserved, it confirmed.
And these are the reasons that you stopped paying the fees, because you thought the state really governed this land, not the federal government.
Well, there's no allegations in the complaint with regard to that. This is an issue that the United States has raised. The position that we are taking in this litigation is that there was essentially actions by the government that barred us from accessing the water rights and making full use of the range for grazing of cattle.
But they have the full right to give the lease to whoever they want to, right?
Well, there's a preference grazing right that attaches to that lease, and that had been adjudicated to the Colvin Cattle Company and its predecessor. So under the statute, the United States is supposed to continue that lease and renew it.
Unless you don't pay the fees. Did you pay the fees?
We did pay the fees. We tendered the fees, and it's in the record at page...
Well, let's even assume you tendered the fees. Why wouldn't the government be entitled to do what it wanted to with its own land?
Well, the issue is if you give a lease to somebody and tell them that you can use this allotment for the raising of cattle, and you already have confirmed the water rights to yourself, and then the United States puts you in a position where it makes it practically impossible to graze your cattle because that they have rotated pastures around, they have imposed conditions on you that make it basically impossible for you to use the allotment. And we have, of course, the occupation of the lands by the horses and burros as well. Those essentially took over the water rights and the forage, and there was none left for the cattle. So you have a lease. You have the government saying to a party, we're going to give you a lease, we're going to let you use this allotment, we're going to withdraw these lands for the specific purpose of grazing, but we're going to allow all these incompatible uses to occur that essentially prevent you from ever putting it into productive use. And we're going to charge you money for it too. And that was the dispute that caused Mr. Colvin initially not to pay his grazing fees. He said, I can't use the land, so why should I pay you for something I can't use? Then in negotiations, they went back and forth for a while about that, and then they decided that they would tender the
grazing. Someone else is using this, right?
Mr. Johns.
Mr. Johns is able to use it.
But only partially. He only has about 300 head of cattle. And so it's a small part of the allotment that he is using. So, but again, you know, he's supposed to truck in his own water, but there's evidence in the record that, in fact, he is using Colvin's water. So... there's no dispute that Colvin owns the 40 Bar Ranch, or there's no dispute that he owns the water rights. So that the issue, when it comes down to it, is what happens when the government says that we give you a lease, we give you this this contract to enter upon these lands and graze your cattle, but we make it impossible for you to do it. I think it's important to note that the Taylor Grazing Act has that specific reservation of rights clause that basically says that. Nothing in the Act shall be construed or administered in any way to diminish or impair any right to the possession and use of water for agriculture or other purposes. Those very words contained in Section 315B of the Taylor Grazing Act. And also we have a savings clause in the Federal Land Policy Management Act that says something similar. All actions by the Secretary concerned under this Act shall be subject to valid existing rights. There's a very important connection here between the water rights and the use of the forage. The use of the water rights and the use of the forage. If you look at the case of AT West, which is cited in our brief there, the Interior Department, in a decision in 1938, in close proximity to when the Taylor Grazing Act was first being implemented, says that essentially if you had these rights prior to 1934, when the Taylor Grazing Act was passed, then you have what is essentially an easement created for the use.
I'll tell you what I don't understand, what's troubling me. You tendered the fee to the state of Nevada. Do you also tender the fee to the federal government?
We did. Yes, Your Honor, we did.
The same amount, the same amount. Sum in the alternative, or two tenders?
It was the same amount.
Was this intended to preserve the lease? Which was canceled?
There was an appeal, an administrative appeal underway, and the federal government was issuing trespass notices. So the Colvin Cattle Company tendered the permit fees in order to alleviate the trespass.
Tendered
issue.
To who?
To the United States, to the Bureau of Land Management.
And what happened to the tender to the state?
The tender to the state was returned to the Colvin Cattle
Company. Why were there trespass notices?
The trespass notices were based on the failure to pay the...
In other words, you didn't pay, and then when they were going to kick you off, you finally said you'd pay.
It was just one year. There was an invoice sent.
1 year of non-payment would bother most landowners, I would think.
It would be a situation where you've rented a house and the landlord won't let you use the house. You know, do you continue to pay your rent under that situation?
You were trespassing in the house for a year, though, without paying? Is that the government's position?
No, Mr. Colvin, Colvin Cattle Company, began removing its cattle. We're talking about 1,000, plus over 1,000 head of cattle that were out on this range originally. There were only 50 that were on the range when the trespass notices were issued.
A little trespassing is still trespassing, isn't it?
I agree with that, Your Honor. But like I said, there's a factual dispute there. We did bring to the court's attention also the Western Watersheds Project versus Mateco, a case just recently decided by the Ninth Circuit. And that deals with BLM and issues with regard to rights of way under the Mining Act of 1866, which, by the way, are involved in this case, despite the statements by the United States in their brief. And that case says that rights confirmed under the Mining Act are perpetual, and they're based on local law and custom, and it talks about the reservation of rights and the savings clauses in the Federal Land Policy Management Act. The United States would have this court believe that somehow Colvin can magically transfer its water rights and use it for another purpose in a different place. But as this court has ruled in Washoe County versus the United States, there is no vested right in a transfer. And in fact, the right, so long as the right remains to use water at its original place of use, there is no taking. Of course, that's exactly the situation that we have here. We are not able to use the water at its original place of use, and we have no vested right to use that water at any place else. The only value for this water is for stock water. And the rights consist of wells and springs scattered over 625,000 acres in southern Nevada. It's a factual question whether they can be used elsewhere. A water right is a usufruct. And if you can't use the water right, then it has no value. And that's essentially what we have. The Nevada courts have recognized that the use of forage and the use of water rights are inextricably linked. And that's in Ray Calvo, Itcana versus Marble, and Anzalabajo versus Laborda. One cannot graze cattle without water, and one cannot use stock water without using forage. So Judge Lawrence Smith, in the Hage case, Hage versus United States, found that implicit in a vested water right based upon putting water to beneficial use for livestock purposes was the pertinent right for those livestock to graze alongside that water. That was after he looked at a record with regard to local law and custom.
That's under the Mining Act or something, isn't it?
That's under the Mining Act of 1866, yes.
Where is this opinion, the Hage opinion? The trial was complete two years ago, and we haven't seen a decision yet.
It's still with Judge Smith. We've had two trials, one on the property rights itself, and then there was a summary judgment that was earlier on. And this is from the property rights opinion at 51 Fed Claims at 580. But we're still waiting for Judge Smith to rule on the taking itself and the valuation. We had that trial about 2 years ago.
Okay, Mr. Van Zandt, you're using your rebuttal time. You may do so or save what's left.
All right. I did want to mention that the lease, we believe, if you look at U.S. versus certain parcels, that case stands for the proposition that this is a lease and it's a contract and it's a compensable contract under the law, and I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank
you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Van Zandt. Ms. Barton?
May it please the Court. I plan to spend most of my time on the primary issue in this case, which is obviously the takings issue. But I would first like to note there are two other types of claims in the case. There's a breach of contract claim, and there's a claim for compensation for range improvements. In our answering brief, we argued that in addition to these claims being properly dismissed for failure to state a claim, these claims should be dismissed, in fact, for lack of jurisdiction. And Colvin Cattle has provided no substantive response to that. We would encourage this court to dismiss those claims for lack of jurisdiction.
You mean lack of jurisdiction of the Court of Federal Claims, not for failure to state a claim, right?
Yes, Yes, the breach of contract claim, we believe, was outside the time for the statute of limitations because their failure to pay the grazing fee required by the lease was in 1995 and released the United States from any compensatory duties under the lease.
It's not a matter of jurisdiction, is it, if the statute is run?
The statute of limitations under the Tucker Act.
There's jurisdiction of the parties?
Excuse me?
There's jurisdiction of the parties? There's jurisdiction of the subject matter?
Jurisdiction under the Tucker Act over the United States. It's in a part of the sovereign immunity waiver under the Tucker Act.
A contract claim?
Excuse me?
Does the Tucker Act relate to contract claims?
Takings and contracts claims, right, yes. And then the other claim, the compensation for range improvements claim is lacks jurisdiction for lack of ripeness because a determination of compensation is required by the Secretary. This court then would review that determination under an arbitrary and capricious standard. Otherwise, the court would have to determine it de novo, and that's not the practice that this court has used, as explained in our brief.
I understand we don't have Judge Smith's Hage opinion before us, but how would you square this with his ruling that within 50 feet of water you have limited grazing rights?
Well, first of all, there is no claim here to a right-of-way in that portion of the Hage opinion, and Judge Smith and Hage actually determined that the general claim that water rights give you a right to graze on the federal domain was incorrect under the 1866 Mining Act.
Is the claim to the entire Montezuma allotment?
Yes. Yes, that is their claim, that they have taken their entire right to graze on the allotment. We also think that Judge Smith is wrong.
Okay.
Now, this claim to... So all their claims, basically, their takings claims, rise from their claim that they own grazing rights on the property. And that claim has been made in a number of forms over the years and has been rejected consistently by the courts, including the Supreme Court, which has held that the grazing in the public lands is at the sufferance of the United States. It's a revocable privilege. And although they come up with a sort of different theory here, the result is the same. The theory here is based on their water rights.
If the state law gives an entitlement to certain grazing rights attendant upon the water rights, how does the federal government acknowledge that?
Well, the premise of that question is, we believe, it's incorrect. State law does not recognize the right to a use as part of the right of a water.
Well, let's assume for a second that it does. Maybe not this case. Let's assume that Montana expressly says that you can graze alongside your water right, whatever it may be. How would that square with BLM leasing policies?
Any rights in the public domain can be controlled by the states only to the extent, under the Supremacy Clause, only to the extent that Congress has allowed the states to do so. The statute that governs here is the 1866 Mining Act. And every court that has examined the 1866 Mining Act has concluded that its recognition of state law's application to water rights extends only to the use of water and not to the use of lands. That includes the Ninth Circuit decision in Hunter versus United States and the Tenth Circuit decision in Diamond Bar, both of which addressed claims just like the claim here, which is that they had water rights and they claimed the rights to graze under the 1866 Mining Act because of those water rights. The language of the Mining Act only says what the state law applies to is the use of water. In fact, the Supreme Court has described that as severing the water rights from other rights in the public domain. So it's clear the Supreme Court does not view these as being bound up together, the rights in the land and the rights in the water.
As a practical matter, how does Mr. Colvin protect his water rights from wild burros or from Mr. John's cattle or from anything else if he's denied any kind of access to it?
I guess there's a couple of answers.
Or how does he use his water right, to be even more express?
I think it's important to look at the water right as we would as any property interest in a takings case, where you have to look at you determine the dimensions of the property interest by looking at the background principles that are in place at the time that the property interest is acquired. Here, Colvin Cattle obtained a water right to put a stock water right to use water to water his cattle that were grazing on the public land at the sufferance of the United States. That's all he obtained in that water right, was the right to use the water for his cattle as long as the United States allowed them to keep the cattle on the land. It's sort of like, we cite the Conti case in our brief, which is one of the fishing boat cases this court has had, where owners of fishing boats have tried to come up and say, we can only use the boat for the fishing that you have revoked our permit for. And this court has held in Conti and similarly and even more fundamentally in American Pelagic that when you have something that you can use only with a revocable interest given by the United States, you don't have any expectation of that continued use. And that's the same
thing. So you really have taken the water too?
We have taken their ability to use their water for stock water at that location. Whether there is other use that could be made of it, I mean, they have disavowed that, and we made a ripeness claim below.
Why couldn't they apply for a right-of-way to truck their cattle in to be watered?
They could apply. I don't know what the result would be. They certainly could apply. And we argued below, actually, that there should be, that it was, the claim was not ripe. But Judge Weiss said, well, their claim is only that they can't use their water for stock here. That's all that they claim that they can do. And so we have limited our argument and appeals just to that discussion. Now, I'd just like to point out their concern that there are issues of fact that were improperly addressed by the trial court, or that matter here, are just incorrect. I mean, Judge Weiss's decision is based completely on matters of law and matters that are within the scope of the plaintiff's complaint. So the question of, you don't need to get to the question of what Nevada state law is, because federal law does not allow Nevada state law to apply with respect to the public lands. But even if you did, they've only maintained that it's the Nevada Stockwater Act of 1925 that provides the state law that's relevant here, and that's just a matter of statutory interpretation. And as Judge Weiss correctly found, that statute is only an exercise of regulatory police powers by the state. And the state... Sorry, I'm talking too fast. Breath. The state Supreme Court three times has held that it had no ability to give any rights in the public lands. There's three Supreme Court cases, Nevada Supreme Court cases we cite in our brief, that hold that the Nevada Stock Watering Act did not give any rights in the land attendant to the water rights that were addressed there. The issue that Judge Rader posed to me about whether there is any state law that would give the rights to use in the land as attendant to a water right, that question was addressed in a seminal case by the Colorado Supreme Court of Cleary versus Schiffer. And in that case, and a lot of the other courts that have ruled on this question under the 1866 Mining Act have relied on that case. And in that case, a mill owner on public land tried to fend off the mineral patenting of the land on which the mill was located by saying that they had obtained a water right that could be used only for that mill. And therefore, they had a right to use the mill at that location and the land couldn't be patented. And the court said, no, that's wrong. You get the use to water by putting it to beneficial use on land, but you don't get the land. So there is no, that case is no different. The result of that case is no different under any other state water law of appropriation that I'm aware of. And Colon Cattle has cited.
But that helps this petitioner, does it not? Because he seeks to use the water for his purpose, not exclusively, but for his purpose, and is denied access to it.
No, it's exactly, the case is supportive of our position.
The mill owner was permitted to use the water for mill purposes. He just wasn't permitted to exclude others from that access.
That case was not about what happened to the water right. It was about what happened to the land. But he could not have a mill there any longer. It is possible he could transfer that water right elsewhere, which is what we were talking about here, the question of whether the water right may be, that is a characteristic of state water law, is that you often may have the option of being able to change the manner and place of use of the water right, which is an issue that has not been addressed in this case. Now, on the wild horses and burros question, the wild horses, this court recognized in the Alves case and in Fellini, although it didn't hold on the matter, but it recognized that the wild horses are not instrumentalities of the United States, and the actions of wild horses do not constitute a taking by the United States.
Was the Montezuma allotment leased to someone else, or was it left open to whatever wild animals might choose to graze there?
It is leased to someone else, and wild horses and burros may also graze there, as they may under the Wild Horse and Burro Act. That the landowner there is required to truck water, although as long as that water is not being used, all water rights are only a usufructuary right. The fact that you're not using it doesn't mean you get to hoard it. Somebody else can use it if you're not using it. So the use, if that landowner used the water, wouldn't be a violation or a taking anyway. It certainly wouldn't be an act of the United States because we've required him to truck the water. But I would note also that you only get a right to a certain amount of water. Each of the water rights they claim to have is for a certain number of cattle, a certain cubic feet per flow of cubic feet per second.
That's not
so there may be water that's other water. It doesn't mean that nobody can go to the water site and use the water. It depends how much.
Is this a natural pond or is this a well?
I believe they have a number of water rights, constituting primarily, I believe, springs and wells spread out around the allotment.
So these are tanks that the animals come to that are fed by a well?
I really don't know, actually. We have not. It's not in their complaint. They did submit certificates that I have looked at, but I'm not that familiar from just what they have. I think one is described as a surface stream right. There's something like 31 of them. I think I have touched on everything I had planned to cover.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Barton.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Van Zandt.
Thank you, Your Honor. On the breach of contract issue, first of all, the United States alleges that the complaint was filed in October 28th of 2003, which is not true. It was August 18th of 2003. That's very important because the final decision on the termination of the lease was made on July 24th and wasn't final until 30 days later, so we were within the 6 years with regard to the termination of the lease. The range improvements issue, there's no procedure set out by the Secretary to allow for administrative procedure for filing a claim. It merely says that you present your claim. We presented our claim for the range improvements to the Secretary by way of filing the complaint. The property claims that Colvin Cattle Company has here arise under federal law. I want to make that clear, not state law. We are looking at the Mining Act of 1866 and the way the Congress has dealt with the rights that were confirmed under that act as they were preserved in the Tailored Grazing Act and the Federal Land Policy Management Act. So that's a very important point that I think is a distinction where you look to state law for the local law and custom to define what the right is, but ultimately the right arises under federal law. The United States has cited to Hunter Hunter was a squatter, and he didn't raise the same rights that we're talking about here. And Diamond Bar is also distinguishable because they were seeking exclusive use, and it was not a takings case. It was an Administrative Procedures Act case. I think the background principles that we're talking about here, at the time of the appropriation of these water rights, you had to look to local law and custom. The local law and custom allowed for the use of the forage along with the water rights. And the United States poses that perhaps somehow we can get these water rights restored by applying for an easement at the site of the Port of Florida Rock and the situation there where the plaintiff there was put in a position of having to apply time and time again for a permit to extract its minerals. And Judge Smith was the trial court judge on that. He said, you know, tell me what you're going to do with regard to those permits. Are they just going to be denied? And that most likely would be the result here. Colvin's attempts would be denied. We ask that the court reverse the trial court and send this back down for a full record on the scant record that we have here. It's not appropriate to rule a motion for summary judgment. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Van Zandt and Ms. Barton.